Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground.
Touchdown, Arizona!
That was beautiful!
Oh, my goodness!
The latest news and notes on the Arizona Cardinals from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown!
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown! Larry Fitzgerald.
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
Not sure why you're laughing over there, Darren. You just put a big hurt on our own Ron Wolfley. What exactly happened over there, Wolf? Because I thought I was expecting Darren to stand over you and go, how did that taste? You were in pain over there.
Are you talking about the kneecap going off the 2x4 stud here underneath the table?
No, wait, was that his knee to you or your knee to the table inadvertently? What happened over
there? Well, I was trying to get out of his way because he came in with such authority. Yeah, walked into the room and
he did have a purpose in his stride.
Kneecap right off the... that felt good.
That's good, Wolf. You know you're alive. That's good. Darren Urban over there. Jim Omohundro to my right. Paul Calvisi here. I keep getting questions from the wife about... how's the shopping going? She's sort of inquiring, you know, without, you know, getting too in-depth this holiday season. I just tell her, you know what? I've decided to embody the Arizona Cardinals. I might have started slow in my holiday shopping, but I'm going to finish strong. And I'm really confident I'm going to be a fourth quarter performer, you know, which I think, Darren, and you talked about this on the website here on azcardinals.com. And yes, by the way, this is Cardinals Underground. Timing, it's everything in life, is it not?
Yes.
If you're going to go 6-1 or 1-6, it's better to start with the latter versus the former, is it not?
Well, I mean, yeah, I would think absolutely. Although it's easy to say that when you're in the middle of it. I mean, when things were really poor at the beginning of the season, I'm sure everybody was wishing there was more wins coming at that point too. But look, somebody asked me if this season is a success if they go 8-8, if they finish strong this back half of the year. And I think that's a complicated question. In itself, I don't think it's a success because you don't make the playoffs and you go 500, and that's not what the goal is ahead of time. But given the circumstances, certainly I think it's something that you can take pride in, and I hate to sound cliche coachy, but it is something you can build on. Much better than if you were 6-1 and then went 1-6.
Do you take, all right, let's continue that argument, Wolf. Do you take every season in a vacuum, or is it a success, or is it more apt to be deemed a success because you were 5-11 the year before? What if you were 11-5 the year before and you finish 8-8? Not so much. But if you're 5-11 the year before, aren't you more apt to say, yeah, it is a successful season?
Yeah, absolutely, Paulie. I will say this to Darren's point right now. Look, it's all about trends. And if you're not going to make the postseason, and it is a slim chance the Cardinals will make the postseason, we all know they've got to win these last two games. But if you're not hypothetically going to make the postseason, wouldn't you rather be trending upwards going into the offseason as opposed to trending down? Of course. I don't think there's any question there. But what makes it special, I think, for the Arizona Cardinals and the fact that they have gone 6-1 in their last seven games, it's the young guys. It is the young guys, and it's the defensive trend. Those two things, the young guys and the fact that the defense has played so well, and it's been a combination of those two things together, I think that bodes so well for a football team. You got a defense, guys. You got a chance to win every game. You really do. And we have seen that to some degree in this winning streak, winning six of the last seven. We have seen it to some degree. You can have a quarterback go out and throw two interceptions and fumble the ball, and yet you're still going to win the game, or at least have a chance, an opportunity to win the game, because your defense has done such a good job all game long. I am so excited for the Cardinals and the future of the Arizona Cardinals because of the young guys on defense that have been making plays. Can you carry that into the offseason? You better believe you can.
All right, we'll get into the defense in depth here momentarily. Let's talk about a young guy who's been under center, John Skelton, because in some ways, Darren, Skelton is sort of a game-by-game microcosm of the Cardinals' season. You know, he's got a QB rating of like 30-something in the first quarter and 90-plus in the fourth quarter. And I'm going to call his record 5-1, even though he didn't start that Niners game. That's he came fair. In after the first series. Yeah. I call it 5-1.
Indeed.
And it's interesting when, the question I put to Ken Wisenhunt after the game, after the win against the Browns, was – what should we know about John Skelton that we can't see for ourselves, or what isn't obvious, or what we haven't asked you yet? He said, you know what? He just has this ability to make a huge play at critical times. And you can't teach that ability. He said, he doesn't get flustered. He's got all this poise. He said, now sometimes that's his enemy, because sometimes it doesn't look like he has any fire, or maybe he's not motivated, which, you know, he said, but that's not the case. He said he just has, you know, Todd Heap reiterated the same thing. He never gets flustered, no matter what the situation, where it is on the clock and the scoreboard in the game. But once again, he said, you just can't teach that ability to make a huge play at the most critical time. And I think, if nothing else, that's what the coaches find most intriguing about Skelton.
I don't think there's any question about that. And he's proven that a couple different times. But, you know, I've mentioned this a few times, and I will hold to it, and we've talked about it on this thing. I mean, my thought process is, at least for these last couple games, if Cobb's healthy, he's my starter. I still want to take a look at him. But I go into this offseason, and I tell both the guys, no promises for 2012, and we'll see how this offseason plays out. I know a lot of people get frustrated with Skelton, but I also, going back to what Wolf was saying about the defense, I see a quarterback that has made some plays, yes, but he has also done some things that, thank goodness the defense is there. I mean, I was down on the field at the end of the game, and it was they hadn't gotten to overtime yet. It was the end of regulation, and they were trying to drive for that last field goal, and he threw a pass that, if it wasn't for Andre Roberts doing a little something, it was picked. And
true.
It was probably pick six.
True.
And that would have lost them the game. And every quarterback makes mistakes, and I understand that. But in that situation, he never should have thrown the pass, and he did anyways. And those are the highs and lows you go with it. And if you look at the stats and you break them down and per game and everything, I mean, the two quarterbacks are very similar in terms of what they've produced. You know, if you look at numbers, and I know numbers aren't everything, but, you know, I don't see a whole lot of difference. I don't think it's a no-brainer that he's better than Kevin Cobb, but I don't think there's any question that Kevin Cobb hasn't shown anything to be he's better than John Skelton either.
So what you're saying right here, right now, if you go into the offseason, it's an open competition?
Did I
hear that correctly?
That's what I would say. I mean,
right.
Nobody's told me that.
Right.
That is not what the coaches have said. But
yeah.
If I'm running this team, which I'm not, but if I am, that's how I would approach it, because I think John Skelton has earned that right.
I want to agree with everything Darren just said, but I will also say this. Just think of last game with John Skelton and what he did. Here he is in the first half. The Cardinals can do nothing with the ball offensively. Suddenly, bingo, here comes a two-minute drill. They put together this drive. John Skelton looks like nails, makes an incredible throw on a corner route in the back of the end zone to Andre Roberts that was like throwing a football through a thimble. That window was so small, and he got it in there. And so that was a huge play going in at the half to only be down 10-7 as opposed to 10-0, obviously. And then, again, the third quarter looking very, very pedestrian, almost disinterested. The fourth quarter comes rolling around. Oh, by the way, he ended the third quarter with a pick. Throwing a pick right there was a great play by a Cleveland Brown defender. Skeen made an unbelievable play on the ball to come up with that pick. But
and
nonetheless,
went through Early's hands, didn't it?
But not, yes. Yeah, well, it kind of bounced off him, and it was okay. A little behind him.
Right.
It was, yeah, batted up and everything. But look, my point is this. You go into the fourth quarter, you're down 10 points, 17-7. So he's already done it at the end of the first half with a two-minute drill. And now you're down 10 points, and somehow, some way, John Skelton makes enough plays where you can send it into overtime. Now, granted, he had a lot of help with O'Brien Schofield and two consecutive sacks, and the ball comes out, and Wiz makes an incredible challenge, by the way, a challenge that I did not see and a lot of people did not see. And suddenly, there's the red flag out there. The challenge is made. John Skelton then proceeds to do what? On the next play, he messes up the shuttle pass or the shovel pass, whatever you want to call it. He doesn't do what he should have done. He should have just thrown it at the feet. You know, he takes a sack, and now all of a sudden you've got to kick a field goal. But still, the point is he made enough plays in the fourth quarter to get it into overtime. He brought the team back as the quarterback. He had a lot of help, but he brought the team back, tied the game up, got it into overtime, and then in overtime played well, as anybody could have possibly expected John Skelton to play, even though Larry Fitzgerald was wide open on the corner route. Dimitri Patterson for the Cleveland Browns blew an assignment, should have been guarding Larry Fitzgerald. He's wide open. John Skelton made his best throw in overtime to Larry Fitzgerald, right on the money. The Cardinals win the game. This is a trait that John Skelton has continued to display over and over and over again. I'm with Darren on that. This is just my opinion. I think what I would do is, I think Kevin Cobb is a better quarterback. I do. I think John Skelton, though, has a characteristic, has an attribute, has a trait that is so intriguing that you must pursue it to the end. You must continue to develop John Skelton and hope that somehow, some way, he would play better in the first quarter, in the second quarter, and not get you in tough situations where he's got to make these incredible plays to bring you back. But it is worth saying, we're going to go into training camp next year. It's Kevin Cobb's job to lose. We've heard that before, too, mm-hmm. with Matt Leinart and Kurt Warner. Why not open it up and say there will be a competition? We think it's going to be Kevin Cobb, but it's his job to prove otherwise.
I would go with you on that one. I agree with Darren, and you can have a competition, but you sort of remove some of the speculation by saying it's Cobb's job to lose. We've seen him. That's probably the route I would go. There's two things, though, that I find very intriguing about John Skelton, and that is, if the NFL is about making plays and it comes down to four or five plays every game, he makes those plays almost without fail, which is very intriguing. The other end of it that I find intriguing is that he's done it with virtually no training camp. He got no reps as a fifth round rookie, and then he got hurt this past year, where they're already giving an inordinate amount of reps to Kevin Cobb because they were trying to ramp him up. So I find that very intriguing as well, that he's done more with less than virtually any quarterback who is 5-1 at this point in his young career.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, there's a lot of pluses with John Skelton, and he's showing them on a week-to-week basis. I think right now, if you're the Cardinals, you've been fortunate enough that you've been playing all these close games, and you do have a quarterback. And actually, Kevin Cobb did it against Dallas. He made the plays that needed to be made when it happened. At some point, you would like to see one of the quarterbacks be in a situation where they're produce enough that if the defense does have a hiccup, that you can score some points. And that's the one thing that neither one of these guys has shown enough, that you have enough of a consistent offense where you feel like, you know, if the defense somehow lets you down and they give up 24 points, that, you know, this offense can stay with it.
There's a couple other things I want to say about John Skelton. Paul, you already pointed it out. The fact that he has this uncanny knack to make a play when you need him to make a play. There's a lot to be said about that, number one.
You agree or disagree with that? Because I got a reaction out of you. I wasn't sure what reaction
totally
it was.
Totally okay. agree right. with okay. it right, right there. The other thing is this. He has also got a very uncanny way of getting out of trouble, of eluding the rush, of escapability, of extending the play. And this has been a trait in all of John Skelton's games. At some point in time, he's going to get away from a rush. He's not a fleet of foot guy, but somehow he's going to avoid the rush where you say to yourself, how did he get out of that? How did he break that? He's big and he's strong. And that's why the Roethlisberger comparisons are out there. Now, not to him again, not to Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not trying to say that John Skelton is Ben Roethlisberger. But the comparison of his elusiveness, his escapability, his ability to extend a play is undeniable. It's there. And the other thing I want to say, Paulie, is, you know, you talk about John Skelton and his poise and how he never seems to get flustered, and sometimes it's to his detriment, maybe, because, you know, he's not an overt personality, maybe not an overt leader. Let me just say this. If John Skelton were to play better in the first quarter, in the second quarter, and settle down and protect the football better, his confidence, I promise you, his confidence would grow exponentially if he would do those things. And once his confidence grows, if that happens, look out, because you'll see a different person from that point forward. It's hard to go over and be demonstrative. It's hard to go over and maybe get in somebody's grill when you've thrown two interceptions in the game already.
Well, and you speak of confidence. I'm very curious about that because you start worrying about the other way. I mean, he's had enough slow starts where you start wondering if it's going to get into his head when these games start of being able to overcome that. And speaking of being in your head, you wonder a little bit about Kevin Cobb. Kevin Cobb has a pretty good game against Dallas, wins the game, finishes very strong, then gets knocked out. And, half, not that it matters per se, but half the fan base acts like Kevin Cobb didn't just play three plays and get knocked out, but half the fan base acts like he just had a 20 passer rating in the game, like he played poorly. And that didn't happen. I mean, Kevin Cobb this last time isn't playing because he got hurt strictly. He certainly wasn't pulled from the game, but there seems to be not just that John Skelton is playing well, but that Kevin Cobb played poorly, and that's not there. And I'm curious to see, again, how he mentally keeps getting back up on the horse, not only to play, but to get past it. I mean, again, this last half of the season, he talks to the media every week, and it just seems to wear on him that the subject is his health, because it can't be football because he hasn't been playing.
He just went through this a year ago, almost exactly, with Philadelphia, you know, Michael Vick behind him and then taking the job and the concussion and everything. And I totally agree with as far, you know, now the fan base is much more likely to compare and contrast the two than they were inclined to do just 2 weeks ago because of what has happened with Skelton. And Wolf, I agree with you. I'm on the sideline, and when it comes to his, I guess we'll call it pocket presence, a component of pocket presence, his ability to escape, not only his athletic ability, but he's got this radar on him. You know, the great quarterbacks have this radar. Oh, here comes a guy from your backside. And he just steps up a half step without really seeing him. Maybe he is seeing him peripherally. Maybe he's sensing him. But he does have the ability just to step up at the precise time to miss a sack or a pass rusher. I find myself saying that to myself on the sideline all the time.
You're right, Paulie. It is a sixth sense. It is something that is so rare. And to Wiz's point again, think about it. You can't coach a guy. You can't coach it where you can come through, have this knack for coming through when the pressure is at its highest. That's a great trait to have as a quarterback.
He's almost got some Tony Romo in him in that, like Steve Young said a few weeks ago, he's mastered or done very well some of the most difficult things that you face as a quarterback. It's some of the easiest things that he still struggles with. And maybe that's just because he's such a young guy without the training camps, et cetera. Two quick thoughts. The 32-yard pass play to Larry Fitzgerald. Two quick, props to the coaching staff, at least from where I was standing, because I asked the coaches after the game about it, the 32-yarder to Fitz that set up the Jay Fila game-winning field goal. You know, how about that set, Wolf, where you get the bunch set, and I'm told it was Fitz's call. You know, he looks out there. If the safety kind of comes down, sensing the run, right, and you're going to go with a power scheme, then it's Fitz's ability to sort of make that audible himself, go out, running to the post or the corner. He saw it. He went corner. Boom. There it is. Game over. And the other thing, I'm not sure got a lot of attention. You tell me, Darren, because you're all over it, was the decision to go with the no huddle in the second half that resulted in 11 plays, 87 yards. Talking to Todd Heap about it after the game, he said, you know what, that was critical for Skelton, because obviously it sort of forces the defense to go into more of a base defense. They can't sub out as many personnel groups. In Heap's words, it sort of defined the defense for Skelton at that moment of the game, and boom, touchdown drive.
I did think it was interesting. It didn't get as much – I mean, I remember thinking at the time I need to talk about this more, but it kind of got lost in the shuffle with everything going on. Obviously the no huddle, because that was both touchdown drives, I believe, ended up being no huddle for the most part. Because,
well, no huddle is different from 2 minutes.
Right, I understand that. But even then, it's interesting. It's interesting that it takes something like that, because if it's true, if Todd, what Todd Heap is saying is right, and it helped define the defense for John Skelton.
Right, I think
that just underscores how much further he needs to go as a quarterback. If, you know, you're in a situation where you're having to run a certain offense just to basically dumb down the defense for you.
And he's done it the last few weeks, Wolf, without the running game, really. At least not nearly as productive as against St. Louis. Has anything changed? Are defenses going at the Cardinals differently when it comes to run defense? What's responsible for
that? They're definitely aware of Beanie Wells, of course, and they're aware that, you know, Beanie has had success, and yeah, they'll run down a safety late much of the time on first and 10. And, you know, the Cardinals are trying to, they're trying to take advantage of that. It's one of the reasons why a lot of fans, you know, they'll look at it and they'll say, you know, just run, Beatty, just run the ball. Why aren't you running the ball? Well, you've got Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald is in my way of thinking, the best receiver in the National Football League, the best receiver on the planet. And if, in fact, they're going to take some chances, and many times, even with the sole safety that is left, the safety that is not in the box, they'll roll him and rotate him to Larry Fitzgerald's side, of course. But at some point in time, you've got to take a chance with Larry Fitzgerald, and you got to take your shots and try to get him the ball. And it's one of the reasons why I also think the Cardinals, with John Skelton in particular, they try to get him going early. They want him. They want to establish John Skelton. They want to get him into some type of rhythm early on and make him a threat early, because other teams watch tape as well. They watch film. They know exactly what the MO is of John Skelton. And if you're gonna jam up the box to stop Beanie Wells, especially in classic rundown situations, why not try to get John Skelton going early? It makes perfect sense to me, but I know there's a lot of fans out there that would rather see him run into the pile with an 8-man front.
Beanie's hurting. How much? You get a sense how much he's hurting, Darren?
You know, I haven't talked to him as much. It's a subject he does not want to go to through. I mean, he'll not talk to you, but he doesn't have any. I mean, you'll get a lot of "I'm fine" and certainly no details, and he doesn't want to go there. But you know, Wisenhunt said it a few times, and he said it again this week. You know, it still affects. It affects some of the things that we call, and more importantly, and you have noticed, I mean, let's face it, even when he's totally healthy, there are times when your Beanie gets through that first line and you're like, just stay on your feet, and he doesn't quite stay on his feet. And Wisenhunt said the knee is affecting that greatly right now, in terms of whether you can either make a quick cut or even the ability to get his feet up and out of a tackle. It's just not happening right now. So sometimes on some of these runs that, if Beanie was healthy, you know, maybe he turns, gets to the second level, and a 6 or 7 yarder ends up being 15 or 20. He just can't do that right now. And it affects on a lot of things. Obviously, if you could add a 20-yard gain and you only get 6 out of it, it's still a nice run, but it's you're having to dink and dunk a lot more because it's taking you a lot longer to get down the field.
And I'd like to expound on what D just said, because in a weird kind of way, this might be the best thing that ever happened to Beanie Wells. Because Beanie Wells, because he's had this knee and he's had it for as long as he has, Beanie Wells, I think, may have learned a axiom of rushing the football, and that is the third rail. And you hear me talk about this all the time, about running people over. I think Beanie, because he doesn't have a ton of confidence in that knee right now, maybe, or because it might be bothering him a little bit more than what he leads on, I think he's adopted a, you know what, I'm not going to make a ton of cuts, so what I'm going to do is run over you. That's what I'm going to try to do. And this might ultimately help Beanie Wells if he can learn this lesson of, you got to mix it up. Not only show that I will run you over, I am going to take my spear and I am going to skew you right here in front of everybody, including your wife sitting up in section 5. You know, if he will do that, now suddenly next year maybe he'll start the hiccup off of that, where he acts like here it comes, and then he's by you. And with his speed, I think in the long run, this might actually help Beanie Wells in his running style, help him learn a lesson.
So if we talk about this defense, Darren, and you know, it's a natural and it's legit, obviously, to talk about the young guys. How much should we talk about the old guys on defense? You know, Adrian Wilson, how much better he's playing right now. Darnell Dockett, who O'Brien Schofield said, you know how we got the second sack, 2 in a row, was Dockett said, let's run a 2-man game right after that first sack. And he actually made an adjustment, and Doc took up a couple of blockers and allowed him to get free. It seems to me that, yes, the young guys are probably the vital component and maybe are the difference, but the old guys have evolved in this defense and are almost as critical.
I don't think there's any question. I mean, you look at a guy like Clark Hagans, who actually has – probably had a better year this year than he did last year. And obviously he's getting up there in age, and they've got young linebackers that they want to put in for him at some point. But he's been fairly effective all year in terms of getting some pressures and doing the job. And I'm sure that helps the fact that he was one of the few guys who really understood this defense from the get-go because of his history in Pittsburgh.
And he's in a rotation. What we said at the beginning of the year,
and that's
you can't
right.
have him playing 60 snaps.
And that's the best part. But Clark Hagans, I mean, what can you say about Adrian Wilson? I mean, clearly a lot of people were worried that he was done after last year, and he clearly has shown he wasn't. I think he got messed up not only with learning the new defense, but with the injury in training camp where he couldn't even be on the field to learn the new defense. He played by his own admission terribly in the beginning of this year, and he's playing really, really well. And there are people out there who feel like he is one of the best, if not the best, safety in the NFC this season. I'll be very curious to know when the Pro Bowl comes out next week if he's in that mix again, because you know what? I think there's a chance he's earned it, and nobody would have guessed that.
I don't know if you guys heard the post-game radio interview with Ken Whisenhunt. I asked him, what did you say to your defense after the Browns opened the game by going all the way down the field? You know, and he jumped right on the end of the question. He got very animated, and Ohms, I mean, he was worked up just answering my question, because you should have seen how worked up he was on the sideline. And he basically gave him an analogy to what Pittsburgh did or failed to do against Cleveland, allowed them to stay in the game. I don't want to see a repeat of that. This is up to you. And he said, yeah, they started sluggish. I don't know. How concerned were you at that point in the game, Wolf? Were you concerned?
Well, yes,
I was.
No doubt about it, because the Cleveland Browns just lined up, start running the ball. I mean, they were doing nothing fancy whatsoever. They were running their zone scheme, and they were running it in between the tackles with Peyton Hillis. What was even more scary was watching it on film. You saw it on film. Oh, my God. Patty cake, baker's man, bake me a cake as fast as you can. It was we had defensive linemen. Calais Campbell, Darnell Dockett, guys that just were not coming off the ball in the least. In the movement that the Browns were getting in between the tackles was stunning, and that's probably why.
Wow.
You could see that from the sideline. I will promise you, and probably hearing a lot of it from the booth as well, but it was just the removal of the line of scrimmage that was so apparent, and that tells me you, sir, are not ready to go, and you better change it. You better change right now. And you know what? To the defense's credit, they did. And that's exactly what is different about this team. I think earlier in the year, you saw it against Minnesota. The same thing was happening, right? And the disaster that happened with the Vikings, and they weren't able to right the ship. Here, you saw it. They did. They put their foot down and said, no, this is not the way we're going to play. We have a new attitude. We have a new collective mentality. We're going to change it, and it's going to stop right here. And they did.
There was a concern I heard from a lot of people, fans, and there was talk about, you know, was that a trap game because of the circumstances? You have just beaten the 49ers and Cowboys, but Browns at home. They're not a good team, this and that. I know for a fact that the coaches had some concern there too, and that's what I thought of when that happened. And the fact that they were able to overcome that, I think, was huge. And I think they've gotten past that hurdle now.
Yes.
Now you're going on the road. That helps your mentality. You're playing a Bengals team that's good and has a chance at the playoffs themselves. I mean, it's virtual playoffs the next 2 weeks against two teams that have done a lot of the same things the Cardinals have this year in terms of surprising some people with records. And I think that helps. And the fact that it only took at least the defense the one drive to really overcome. I mean, you don't want to see the big play happen against the Cardinals, and I'm not saying it's okay. Michael Adams can't lose contain on that blitz, but to me, that was more fluky than anything that defense
yes.
really did poorly. After that first drive, I don't have any problems with what the defense did.
Yeah, the first drive is much more concerning to me than, you know, the big play where, you know, Seneca Wallace basically made a play, a single play versus seven plays, 76 yards in 3.5 minutes, and you get smash caked all the way down the field, which is why Ken Whisenhunt called the entire defense together on the sideline right away, which does not happen that often, where the head coach takes time away from the sideline to get the whole defense together and basically give them a verbal boot to the behind. So, Wolf, what do we need to know on the Bengals? I see their, you know, their defense is top rated. You know, there's a big discrepancy between pass and run. You know, I mean, they're top notch and they're number six overall. Is that where the Bengals win games on defense right now?
Yeah, definitely. Even though Andy Dalton and AJ Green make probably the best rookie tandem I have seen in the National Football League in years.
Wow.
Talking about AJ Green, what a freak he is. He's Randy Moss with natural hands. Seriously, Paul.
Wow.
Runs like the wind, 6'4", over 200 pounds, and runs like the wind. And Andy Dalton is so impressive. You watch him on film for a rookie. I think the Cincinnati Bengals have found themselves the quarterback of the future. But defensively for the Bengals, they're a 4-3 defense. They're aggressive. They're top 10 in almost every category that really matters. They love to put pressure on the quarterback. They're number four in sacks with 39 in the National Football League. They got a no-name defense, though. They just don't make mistakes, and yet they get the job done. And Mike Zimmer, their defensive coordinator, how long is it going to be before this guy gets a head coaching job? Because he has done an outstanding job with a bunch of no-names. Once again, you talk about Ray Maualuga, right? Now, there's a name people will recognize, but it's not like Maualuga has gone to Pro Bowls. He is not. Nate Clements, the same thing. Clements went to one Pro Bowl in 2004. A good, solid cornerback. Leon Hall, maybe people heard of Leon Hall, but you know, overall, these guys, they just work so well together. They play a disciplined, buttoned-up brand of defense where it's going to be high pressure. It's classic zone scheme. They're going to come after you. They're going to pressure you, hope that you make mistakes. Even though they haven't come up with a lot of takeaways this year, this is a good, solid defense. And it starts with defense for the Bengals if they're going to win.
So, Darren, there's the game inside the game. There's the game outside the game. Last week, you know, you mentioned maybe a trap game. That was sort of the thinking. This time around, it's a compressed week. You got a Saturday game. It's on the road. You know, it's going to probably be cold, maybe even raining or sleeting on the sideline. You know, the holidays are into the mix. I don't know. John Lott's words, you know, get your mind right. How much concern, if any, do you think there is about the Cardinals just going on the road and the circumstances surrounding this matchup?
Well, as we sit here earlier in the week, hopefully some of the worries about weather aren't going to be a big deal. It's supposed to be clear. It's supposed to be in the low to mid 40s, which is not horrible.
It's a break.
It's not warm, but it's not horrible.
Spoken like a guy in the press box.
I think it's a tough test. I mean, I think, you know, with Wolf talking about this defense of the Bengals and how they play, and while Andy Dalton has been played really well and he's got AJ Green, that's not an offense that's going to blow you off the field. Their games play out a lot like the Cardinals games. They play it close. Things happen at the end of games. They're not unbeatable. You know, they just lost to TJ Yates and the Texans a couple weeks ago, and I think that was in Cincinnati. I don't remember off the top of my head, but
yes, it was.
The bottom line is this: this is a game that's winnable. It's a game I think that would again mark another step in the team and how this team has developed if they win this game. When they beat the Eagles on the road, but the Eagles were definitely in a bad place when they took on when they went to Philadelphia, and that doesn't mean it's any less impressive, but that's kind of where that was. And the two signature wins that they've had of late, the Cowboys and 49ers, that was here. So if they can go on the road, play a Cincinnati team that has every right in the world to say we're playoff worthy and still might make the playoffs, I think that would be a gigantic thing. But I think they got to get off to a decent start. They got to do something offensively. They can't just sleepwalk up until the end of the first half. That's going to come back to bite them and bite them hard at some point. And I'm hoping that that's not this week, because I'd like for that game against Seattle in the final week to mean something. That would be kind of fun.
And what, 22 teams are still in contention for the playoffs, which is the third most ever at this point in the season with 2 weeks to play since 1978. So there you
That's
go.
That's the NFL, the league of hope and the league of competition, as it should be.
as Santa's making his journeys on Christmas Eve, you know, let's hope that he can do something to ensure that clear weather that Darren is forecasting. So, you know, let's just hope the sleigh goes overhead, some of that Santa dust, drop it over Paul Brown Stadium, and, you know, let's make sure there's no wet stuff out there.
I'll have some ribs, please, and a four-way Skyline chili.
Wolf, are you ready for an encore performance of what was a memorable performance you put on 2007 at the Montgomery Inn? Honestly, Wolf, it might have been your all-timer.
Is that in the media guide?
There was a dinner in Seattle once. There was a dinner, I think, in D.C. once. But the dinner in Cincinnati, they're still talking about at the team hotel by most of the Cardinal staffers who were actually there. It was a table of about 10, Wolf. It was, just ask Dave Pasch. We'll talk about it on game day, and that's when we'll talk to you next. For Ron Wolfley, Darren Urban, Jim Omohundro, I'm yours truly, Paul Calvisi, azcardinals.com.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. Mom's cooking chicken and collard greens. Rice and stuffing macaroni and cheese. And Santa put gifts under Christmas trees. Decorate the house with lights at night. Snow's on the ground, snow white, so bright.